This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. I've heard many actors say with reverence that they studied at the HB Studio in New York. That's the studio run by my guest, the celebrated actress and teacher Uta Hagen. The studio was founded by her late husband, Herbert Berghoff, in 1945. Some of the actors who studied there include Jack Lemmon, Stocker Channing, Matthew Broderick, and Lily Tomlin. Many actors have studied Uta Hagen's books, Respect for Acting and A Challenge for the Actor. Uta Hagen started her acting career over 60 years ago and worked with now legendary people including Eva Le Gallien, the Luntz, and Paul Robeson. She was born in Germany and moved to Madison, Wisconsin at the age of 6 when her father accepted a position teaching art history at the University of Wisconsin. In 1995, Uta Hagen starred in the title role of Mrs. Klein off-Broadway. Now she's starring off-Broadway in Collected Stories. She plays Ruth Steiner, a prominent writer and teacher who lives alone. I asked her to describe the story.
The play is about her relationship to a young protege, who develops into a protege, a young writing student. And they form a very, very close relationship, and like mother and daughter. And eventually the young writer betrays her by taking material that and personal things of the teacher's life, and capitalizing on it, and it's actually a play about betrayal, as to me at least.
Now, is there a relationship that you were able to draw on in preparing for this role?
Well, betrayal is something I think everybody has experienced, and that's why I think the play has such a reaches so many people on that level. To trust someone, to take someone into one's life and form a close relationship and then have that relationship abused and used for personal gain, I think is not uncommon, unfortunately. And I think that's thematically what it's about.
I guess I'm wondering, too, if you've ever been wary of students who you've become very close to feeling that at some point they might cross over a line.
No. But you see, in acting, it's different. They can't steal anything of mine. I'm offering most everything in my techniques, but they have to do it on their own, and they can't. When you're good, it's very hard to have anybody copy you.
You once said that at your age, and you're, I think, 79 now, it's hard to find roles that aren't about Alzheimer's disease.
Isn't that the truth? Or that have to do with intelligent people and functioning people. It's very difficult.
Is that very frustrating for you? Would you like to?
Oh, sure. Uh-huh. I mean, when I found Mrs. Klein, I was so thrilled, which is the last play I did. And I went into doldrums. I thought I'll never find another challenging role. And then my director, William Carden, who's also the director of the artistic director of the HB Playwrights Foundation, where I work, is found this play, and I just flipped, and I've been happy ever since last January when I began working on it.
Let me ask you a question that I hope you don't misinterpret, but I think most people find that once they're in their 30s, their memory starts to not be as good as it was. And everyone I know seems to be struggling with this. I'm wondering if over the years, if you felt any sense that your memory isn't as sharp as it once was, and if you have to, like, learn lines in a way any different from the way you used to when
No.
you were much younger.
No. It takes me longer to learn lines because I learn them correctly and not because my memory's gone. But if people memorize lines mechanically, they're learning them wrong anyway, and I can do that very quickly. People say I'm a fast studier. I said, so am I if I just want the mechanics. But if I want to know what I'm talking about, to learn the content of what I'm talking about, and have the words become inevitable through my connection with their meaning, that takes a long time.
You're known as a great teacher as well as a great actor, and you've written a couple of books about acting. You write that there are hundreds of different people within you who surface through the day, within anyone who surface through the day. Do you recommend that actors find the person within them that's closest to the role that they're playing?
Well, it isn't one person in you. In other words, when you create a role, you are selecting from various aspects of your life and putting it together to create that new character. But all of that has to spring from your understanding of yourself. And that's what takes so long.
You say that an experience that has served you many times, including when you played Blanche in Streetcar Named Desire, is an experience from your childhood when you were like pelted with hard snowballs by kids in the neighborhood, and you were called an atheist. What is it from that scene that stayed with you so much, from that experience?
Well, it was a bitter cold winter night. I was hounded through the streets with snowballs by children. That's terrifying. I never forgot it. It was just like being in hell.
What is it from that experience that you summon up when you need to for a role?
I don't know.
Okay. Mm. I'm wondering if there is a kind of experience that is so frightening or rich for you, if you've used it to draw on several times for roles, does the experience dry up? Does it lose its power to have that energy for you?
As a matter of fact, that experience might wear out because I've talked about it a lot. If you don't talk about it a lot, it stays useful. When you explain to an audience, to somebody, a friend or, not a friend, but a colleague who's working with you, what sources you're using, if you tell them that, your secret is gone. Now they look at you with that knowledge of what you're using and judging it, and you can't use it anymore.
That's interesting. So you won't talk about these things with the people you're performing with?
No.
But you'll talk about it with your students?
Not what I'm using in the immediate role. I give them examples like the snowball.
Right.
Now that's used up for me because I've talked about it a lot.
In one of your books about acting, you talk about how you can't be inert on stage and you have to find out what it is that you actually do while you think you're doing nothing so that you could do that kind of thing on stage. Have you thought about that a lot, what it is you're doing when you're...
I'm
really
going to
anything.
Interrupt you right now.
Go ahead.
Because, again, everything you're discussing, you have read. It interests you. Are you an actor?
No, I'm not.
Then it's none of your business. Now, let me explain to you why. It may interest you, may fascinate you, but if... you see, I feel that in the theater, everybody thinks they can act. Everybody is fascinated about another human being on stage. If it's very convincing, they usually are sure that they could do it too, which is not true at all. If you would go to a violinist, you would not ask him about his bowing arm, about his elbow position, about his phrasing. And if he told you, you wouldn't know what he's talking about, and you would be bored. If you went to a painting class and a watercolor class, and you saw a teacher showing somebody how to put how to wash a piece of paper that is going to have watercolor put on it in a minute, you'd say, "What do they teach here? How they're watering down a page?" These are not the secrets, but the craft itself. You wouldn't ask a scientist because you wouldn't know what he was talking about, and you must. I feel an audience should learn to respect acting as a craft in the same way that if I do explain it, it might titillate you. You might understand a little of it, but the real impact or import of it for a fellow artist, you would not get.
I don't
say that to offend you. I just believe that with all my heart.
I want to say I totally respect what you're saying, but I just beg to differ on a couple of things. That, for example, I would be asking the violinist about their phrasing and their... the bend of their arm and all of that.
Why?
Well, because I think...
Do you play violin?
No, but...
Then I think you might ask him, but I think the violinist would look at you like you were nuts, and I think you are.
what I have found as someone very interested in these things is that, for instance, if the violinist talks to me about his or her phrasing, it might help me hear music, hear things in music that I didn't hear before. I find that actually understanding more about craft is not only interesting in its own right, but helps me perceive things that I didn't perceive before, which I like.
That's a very valid point. And maybe I'm just in reaction to so many people who ask these questions without and misunderstanding in... of the layman in terms of an acting technique are so profound that I think I've pretty much had it in my life with that. I think that's probably part of my rebellion.
I'll tell you another reason why I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts about acting, though I respect you for not wanting to talk about this, is that I think really good actors have great insights into the body and how the body is used, how the body communicates, how the voice communicates, and also that great actors are great observers of other people, and they just have great insights into
that's true.
How
and
people
I think,
move.
But you see, the body again, which I'm gung-ho about,
mm-hmm.
I'm talking about it all the time, and I believe that the body as a instrument of communication is all-powerful, and the biggest influence in my life for that training came from modern dance. Without being balletic or dancerish, but it very strongly influenced me. However, very fine actors very often cannot define themselves what it is they are doing. Lorette Taylor could not tell you what she was doing. She had no idea. She was intuitive, instinctive, great performer.
I've certainly noticed that as an interviewer, that some of the really great artists I've interviewed.
God, some of the best ones And I happen to have, because I've been teaching, and I found in my own work that very often when I couldn't explain something, it was because I didn't understand it myself.
Mm-hmm.
When I couldn't articulate it, it was because it was fuzzy in my own head. Now, I do know that I can do it, nevertheless, but I may not be able to communicate it to someone else.
Perhaps you'll let me ask you about the voice, since I do speak on the radio.
Yes.
I know that you've recommended singing lessons for people who aren't necessarily going to be singing on stage, but are just going to be speaking. What do you feel you've learned about your voice from studying singing? I'm assuming you've studied it.
I did. You see, it's the same with when I say dance, modern
mm-hmm.
dance, for
mm-hmm.
the body of the actor, which does not make them self-conscious about stage movement, but gives them a sense of alignment, a sense of an awareness of their body and space. In the same way, singing, rather than voice for the theater, makes them not listen to themselves. It prepares the vocal instrument, the diaphragm, the whole tone of the voice in the head. Without making you now listen to yourself when you talk. Do you understand what I mean? The self-consciousness, when it makes you listen how it sounds, you're going to be a bad actor. The voice has to be there for you, to serve you when the time comes.
Right. So you're not worrying about how you're doing your lines.
You're
learning about the sound and physicality of your voice.
Exactly. It's there from the singing. It serves, the instrument is ready. It's primed.
My guest is actress and acting teacher Uta Hagen. She's now starring off-Broadway in the play Collected Stories. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is actress and acting teacher Uta Hagen. Your acting career was launched by what I perceive to be as a very bold gesture. When you were, I think, 17, you wrote a letter to Eve Le Gallienne asking if you could work with her.
Yep.
And I think that's a very brave thing to do.
I didn't even think it was brave. I was also very stupid. I thought she still had the civic repertory, which I knew, had read a great deal about and heard about. And it was the only repertory company in America at the time, or there hasn't been one since, I don't think, a real repertory company. And she was doing great plays and contemporary new playwrights and Ibsen and Chekhov and Shakespeare, and that's what I wanted to do, and I wanted to be a part of that. And based on that, I wrote her, and I said, this is what I want, and could I audition for you, and I want to be a part of your theater. And didn't realize that the Civic had already folded, and she was still functioning, but not in that capacity. And then she was working on a production of Hamlet, which I didn't know. And I went home after my audition with her, and in spring of 37. And then I was, my father wanted me to go to college, and because at that time you couldn't get a job at Macy's if you didn't have a degree. It was during the Depression. And I was itching to just go into the theater. I didn't want to do college. So I thought I'll do it in a 3-year plan and take summer school. And I went to enroll in summer school and came home, and there was a letter from Miss Leganin asking if I would be interested in coming east and working with her on Hamlet. And that was my debut in the theater, Ophelia.
Now, was that letter based on her having seen you or just based on your letter?
No, based on my letter.
What?
My letter to her.
What did you say in that letter?
I don't know.
That led to that invitation.
I really don't know how I used to persuade people that I was fabulous because I guess I believed it. And I don't know how I interested. My agent said to me, who was my agent at the time, she said, I don't know, when you walked in, you knew you were great, so we believed it. And I don't think I had egomania at all. I just believed I had a big talent and I was going to be a great actress.
So what was it like for you playing Ophelia so early in your career?
I don't remember. You see, it's all like a haze and blur. It was a wonderful experience. And then in essence, I studied with her because I worked with her in the play and that whole company with fencing lessons, and we had all sorts of extracurricular things we were asked to do. And we wove our own costumes at her looms. And it was a phenomenal experience for me. And then when that was finished, which went very well at Dennis, we played it in Dennis, Massachusetts on Cape Cod, and got wonderful reviews from Elliot Norton and all the fine Boston critics. And then she was going to do eight plays in repertory and work on it for 3 years. She had a huge grant for that, and I was going to be part of that. And then I rehearsed with her for 3 months, and she abandoned the whole thing because she felt the company wasn't good enough, which I don't think it was. And so I worked with her on The Seagull. I worked with her on other roles in the fall. And then at Christmas, the whole thing was collapsed. And then I went on to do The Seagull with the Lunts. I don't believe it. When I laugh, it's because it's like some fairy tale.
Well, before we go on to your experience with the Lunts, you mentioned that you had fencing instruction when you were with Eve LeGallien. I mean, have you ever had to fence in a role? What is the point of studying fencing?
Oh, fencing is like tennis for an actor. It's the ideal sport to learn. For agility, for give and take, for spontaneity, it's fabulous.
I always thought that that actors studied fencing in case they were playing a period piece. But you're saying that they study fencing to be more physically responsive.
Oh, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
It's like I very often compare really good actors with very great tennis players. In other words, the give and take, the receiving and sending is the spontaneity and the immediacy of that. Once you sense that, then you know what acting is all about.
Now, you worked with Alfred Lunt and Lynn Fontaine on Broadway in The Seagull. These are like great names of the theater, but most people today have never seen them perform and know them only through legend. What were they like? What was so special about them?
Well, they were an enormous influence on my life. They just, if I say only one thing, of discipline. I've never, what they pounded into me in terms of theater discipline has never left me. And I've tried to pass that on because I'm very shocked most of the time at young actors who don't understand what a disciplined performer is like in terms of the simplest things of your own health, of your rest, of your readying yourself for work, of the hours you put into work. I can work 12 hours in a row and not fall down. And the respect for the craft, for the love for the theater, the need to make it into a true offering for an audience. I mean, I knew some of these things before, but they were kind of reconfirmed and I saw it in practice. They were phenomenal.
When you say they taught you discipline, could you elaborate on what it was that they taught you that helped you with discipline?
Well, they were disciplinarians in the toughest sense of the word. You were, if your curtain was at 8:30 in those days, your half hour was at 7, at 8, you were in the theater at 6:30 and not a moment later. Somebody like Clarence Derwent, who was the president of Equity at one point, very prominent actor, played in, with them in The Pirate, and he played the part of the pirate who didn't appear until the third act. That was at 10 o'clock. He was still in the theater at 6:30. And the no-nonsense backstage, never, you don't drink during the day, you don't come to the theater in a messy state, you look after your costumes. Miss Fontaine used to sit with me trying to teach me a decent makeup, which I'd had classes in for years. And she would smack my hands if while I was putting on my eyebrow pencil, said, no. She'd say, you make up for the, not for the last row gallery with opera glasses, but for somebody in the front row with opera glasses. And that's what I'm talking, and how that you don't have on a beautiful costume and have a malted milk and spill it in your lap. In other words, everything had to do with true care about everything you did and everything you brought to a performance.
Uta Hagen, she's now starring off-Broadway in the play Collected Stories. Her latest book is called A Challenge for Actors. She'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.